Throughout the 50 days of Easter, sacred music for the world. LutheranPublicRadio.org. Listen 24/7 to sacred music for the Easter season. LPR, LutheranPublicRadio.org.
He said, I expect to die in bed. My successor will die in prison, and his successor will die a martyr. His successor will pick up the shards of a ruined society and help rebuild civilization, as the church has so often done in human history.
This is a solid case. Classical historians would sell their grandmothers to get this kind of corroborating evidence for the authorship of secular works of antiquity.
There's countless stories of the praise and worship leaders who end up losing their faith altogether, and it's no wonder. This is a dangerous place to find yourself as the manipulator of both God and man.
This is Mark from Michigan, and I am a lawnmower listener. We love Issues Etc.
Well, there's boldness, no doubt about that, in this action. I don't know if this is unprecedented. It certainly feels unprecedented to me when I read a story about the attempts to remove a Roman Catholic archbishop in San Francisco by Roman Catholics and others who say, well, they just disagree with his view on natural marriage, and they think it's unthinkable that he would ask Catholic schools to maintain a natural definition of marriage. They're appealing to the Pope to have this archbishop removed. Well, that takes some boldness. And of course, it is a feature that the gay activist contingent, especially those advocating for the redefinition of marriage, find in no short supply. They are very bold and emboldened. We're going to be talking about that with Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse of the Ruth Institute here on Issues Etc. in Hour 2. Welcome back. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're coming to you from the studios of Lutheran Public Radio in Collinsville, Illinois. Thanks for tuning us in. Chris Roseborough of Fighting for the Faith will join us after that. We'll talk about an interesting teaching that's popular in evangelicalism, Shemitah, an alleged seven-year cycle that God follows, that he requires even the United States to follow, and that's why the economy is such as it is. We'll walk through a little bit of this confusing false teaching this week in Pop American Christianity with Chris Roseborough of Fighting for the Faith. You can join us for the next hour with questions or comments, 1-877-623-MYIE, 877-623-6943. Send us an email, talkback@issuesetc.org. Send us a tweet at @IssuesETC, or our beloved on-demand listeners use the Issues Etc. comment line, 618-223-8382. Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse is a regular guest. She's founding president of the Ruth Institute based in San Marcos, California. She taught economics for 15 years at Yale and George Mason Universities, and she's author of the books Smart Sex and Love in Economics. Jennifer, welcome back.
Hi, Todd. Thanks for having me.
A boldness. I'm trying to think of a better word for this that doesn't become scatological at some point. What makes the Roman Catholics and others in San Francisco think that they're going to be successful appealing to the Pope to remove this archbishop, Archbishop Salvatore Cordelone, over his doing what an archbishop is supposed to do, it sounds like to me.
Well, I don't know what makes them think they're going to succeed, but, you know, this is characteristic of the revolutionary mind. You push, and, you know, 90% of what you say is outrageous and unthinkable. But if you get that 10%, by golly, you know, you've really got something. So I think the word you were struggling for is chutzpah.
Yes.
You know, it's a Yiddish word you're looking for there. It takes a certain amount of chutzpah to think that a bunch of people could hire a PR firm and pressure the Pope into doing what he wants, you know. So I don't know what they're thinking, but they're certainly putting a lot of heat on Archbishop Cordelione.
Fill in the gaps. Tell us the whole story here, if you would.
Well, the story, as far as I'm concerned, begins with the fact that Archbishop Cordelione was at one time the Bishop of San Diego, the Auxiliary Bishop of San Diego, a dear friend of a lot of us here in San Diego. And in fact, he was very active in promoting Proposition 8. Back in 2008 when that was going on. And so when he was moved up to the Bay Area, it was pretty clear that Pope Benedict was saying, you know, we're not backing down on the gay marriage issue, people. You know, Corleone is going to be your archbishop there in San Francisco. So from the beginning, the gay lobby and the powers that be, even within the city, have had him in their crosshairs, you know, that we've got to do something about, you know, this person that we don't care for who has the nerve to think that marriage is between a man and a woman. So they've done a variety of things, you know, and this is the latest. And what precipitated it was the fact that the Archbishop tried to, in fact, did clarify the employment contract and the employee handbook for all of the teachers of the Archdiocese in San Francisco to make it clear what was expected of a teacher in a Catholic high school, that you need to teach the faith and you need to be living in such a way that is not openly in opposition to the teaching of the Catholic faith. So, you know, it's not that he expects to, you know, peek in everybody's bedroom to find out what they're doing. It's that he's asking that you not be living in open scandal or advocating things openly that are against what the church teaches. And that threw this whole group of people into a tizzy, which is not unprecedented. These people get their bowels in an uproar pretty regularly, a lot of these guys, but or they kind of feign outrage, you know. But in this case, what they did that's unique is they hired a public relations firm to assist them in discrediting the bishop and in pressuring the archbishop. So that's what I think what is the new flavor here, Todd.
So they've gone pro on this.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, when that first came out, the guy they hired is a guy named Sam Singer, whose previous clients have included the Chevron Corporation, when the Chevron Corporation was responsible for some environmental problem in the Bay Area that was harmful to people within the city of Richmond and the city of Richmond itself. Sam Singer swooped into action to make Chevron look good so that the city wouldn't have to... so that the city wouldn't be able to recover from Chevron everything that it wanted to recover and so on. So he's a hired gun, you know, he'll work for anybody. And, you know, some of his past clients have now been, you would think, would be typical left-wing clients. But anyway, there you go. The real question that people have is, who's paying this guy? Who is paying for an expensive attack dog public relations firm to go after the archbishop? And he keeps saying, well, you know, concerned parents are paying for it. And, you know, I don't believe that. I don't believe that somebody's having a bake sale to raise money to pay for this guy's services. You know, that is utterly incredible. But so far, no one has come out and explained, you know, where this money is coming from.
On the other end of the equation, of course, they're trying to put pressure on Pope Francis here.
Right.
What are your thoughts there? It doesn't strike me that any pope wants to be pressured by a PR firm, much less... on this issue, but what are your thoughts on the attempt to pressure the pontiff?
Well, I think this is unprecedented that people would do a thing like that, although, you know, one hates to say that. In the long history of the Catholic Church, there may be some equivalent of it back in the Renaissance or something. You know, I don't know, but certainly in modern times, I've never heard of anything quite like this before. But I have a feeling that it is going to backfire because, you know, I read in an Italian newspaper, you know, a feeling that they're just aghast. It's just aghast that somebody would try to do that. And then there have been numerous petitions, numerous online polls, and the archbishop is winning in these various petition battles. So we at the Ruth Institute, we have a petition up. And so if your listeners will go to the Ruth Institute Facebook page, you can sign this petition. Ours is unique in that we specifically say that this is an interfaith petition, and we are people of all walks of life and of all faith traditions who respect and admire the archbishop for his moral leadership. So we would love to have some Missouri Synod Lutherans join our petition at the Ruth Institute Facebook page.
Folks, I urge everybody to sign this online petition to support Archbishop Corleone, and you can find it at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. I urge you to do so. It's important that everybody's voices get tossed in there. One more question on that, before we move on to a new subject. The people who signed this what, 100 people who signed this letter calling themselves Roman Catholics, if you had an opportunity to talk to them as a group, especially with regard to their claim of being good Roman Catholics, what would you say?
Well, you know, if I had a chance to talk to them, well, you know, some of them have a history of dissenting from church teaching. You know, a friend of mine, Ann Hendershot, did a whole article on this subject, and a couple of different people have, you know, have looked into this a little bit. And some of these names are people who have a history of dissenting from Catholic teaching, particularly on issues that have to do with sexuality and gay marriage and so on. And so it's in a way, it's the usual suspects, you know, the usual kind of people making the usual kinds of complaints that the church is just not with the times in going along with the zeitgeist. And of course, our response at the Ruth Institute is, who wants to go along with these times? The sexual revolution has harmed millions of people, and the Archbishop is trying to make sure that the students at his school have the opportunity to hear the authentic Christian alternative to the sexual revolution, which he thinks, and I think, and I think all of your listeners think, is a much more life-giving, humane, realistic alternative than the sexual chaos of the sexual revolution. That's what it's all about, is making sure that children have the opportunity to learn that there's an alternative to the San Francisco left's preferred lifestyle. Let's put it that way.
Speaking of the sexual revolution, it's always been well-funded, especially as it has progressed, if you can call it progress, but it gained some very, very deep pockets. And it was recently a story out of Washington how Wall Street came out on gay marriage. What has happened here now with big money getting behind gay marriage politically?
You know, Todd, honestly, that is the big story. The big story is that the rich, the powerful, the influential are pretty much all lined up in favor of redefining marriage. And when you look back on it and really look at the history of the sexual revolution, you don't see a mass popular uprising demanding no-fault divorce or demanding abortion on demand. You don't see that. What you see are the elites of society saying, you know what, we like the idea of the sexual revolution. We're going to put our influence behind it, and we're going to see if we can make it happen. And through court case after court case, they have done exactly that, if you look back on it. So in one sense of the word, this move is nothing new. To say that all these Wall Street companies, these big banks and so on, have petitioned the Supreme Court, you know, in an amicus brief supporting the redefinition of marriage. In one sense, it's nothing new. But in another sense, it's kind of an ominous step, I think, for, you know, kind of normal people, the 99%, I guess we're supposed to be. It's kind of an ominous step to see that pretty much all of the elite sectors of society are stepping in line, and sort of ordinary people who are trying to live their lives and raise their kids and transmit some kind of healthy sexual morality to their families, that we're stacked up against some pretty heavy hitters on the other side.
The strategy employed here is just wickedly clever. Generally speaking, at least according to the story on this, gay activists will locate someone up in the highest person they possibly can in the hierarchy of one of these financial firms who's out, who's openly gay. And they will use that person as leverage with the company in order to subtly and not so subtly threaten the company with the prospect of accusations, lawsuits, of discrimination if they don't put the whole company behind whatever the gay activists are pushing. That's clever.
Yes, that's right. There's usually an inside person. I think that's right. That the article that you're referring to certainly did. They didn't spell it out exactly, but if you read between the lines, you can see that that's what they're talking about. And they also, of course, didn't say, "Hey, we're threatening you. Hey, this is protection money." You know, they didn't say that either. But when you kind of have lived in this in the current climate in which we're living, in the kind of witch hunt climate that we're all operating in, I think you can pretty much read between the lines a part of what's there. You know, you get to wear the gay-friendly merit badge, and we'll say nice things about you in public. And if you don't, something worse might happen to you, you know, like we say mean things about you. So, yeah, that's a big part of the strategy.
I wonder if that was what made the difference after Indiana had its law, the RFRA law signed, Religious Freedom Protection Act signed there. What made the difference in the media attention and really the frenzy that was there because business got involved?
Yeah, I don't know the answer to that, Todd. I wouldn't want to speculate about that. But I do think it's pretty clear that when people say, this is the right side of history, everything's moving towards genderless marriage, everything's moving toward the next steps of the sexual revolution, you might as well get in line and go along with it. When people are talking about like that, what they really mean to say is the rich and the powerful want this, and they're going to get it one way or the other, and you all need to just shut up and be quiet and go along with it, because that's the way it's going to be. I mean, that is what I read from the fact that these Wall Street companies are now all involved, you know.
Well, here's the final question I have for you as an economist. Are we looking at a future where people who have religious sensibilities on this issue should think twice before they open the ownership of their companies to the public, go public, so to speak? Are they wiser to keep the ownership of their companies, be they big or small, private? Because once you're publicly traded, once you're publicly owned, you will get pulled into this vortex.
That may very well be one of the long-term consequences of this, Todd. But, you know, the smaller companies that are privately held, you know, they get their share of problems and attention, too, of unfavorable attention, too. So I think that might be an important strategy for some companies, but I don't think it's going to really – it'll protect you from a certain set of things. That's true. But companies large and small, public and private – are being pressured in this way to conform to the tenets of the sexual revolution. That just seems to be a given at this point. And that tells you, I think people should realize what this means. It means that the sexual revolution is an elite movement. It is not a populist movement in any way, shape, or form. And that's the conceit that the media wants to try to create. Oh, there's this groundswell of opinion. There's all this popular support for it. A lot of that so-called consensus has been manufactured by simply excluding from the discussion people who have a different view. I mean, look at what happened with these court cases. The most sophisticated legal firms and law firms have basically bowed out from ever defending man-woman marriage in the courts. And so the guys going up against you're going to have, in a sense, a professional mismatch when you do get to the Supreme Court next week, where you've got, you know, basically a civil servant from one of those states is going to be defending marriage, and arrayed against him is a whole army of Ivy League-educated, big firm-type lawyers who are defending the sexual revolution and who are pushing for the sexual revolution. You simply cannot maintain. It's just not plausible at all to think that this is some kind of mass popular uprising. It is nothing of the kind. It is something created by the elites, financed by the elites, and implemented by the elites.
Dr. Jennifer Roback Morris is founding president of the Ruth Institute based in San Marcos, California. She taught economics for 15 years at Yale and George Mason universities, and she's author of the book Smart Sex and Love in Economics. Remember to sign the online petition this weekend in support of Archbishop Cardinaleone under the Listen On Demand page at issuesetc.org. Jennifer, thank you so much for your time.
You're very welcome.
When we come back, we're going to get together with Chris Roseborough, Fighting for the Faith. Talk about something, I've never heard of this before, but apparently it's very popular among evangelicals, an alleged 7-year cycle that God imposes on his people, including the United States, called Shemitah. We'll hear some of it and get Chris Roseborough's response, as we do this week in Pop American Christianity, right after this.
The There are nearly 20 million college students in the United States. 40% will stop going to church during college. 50% will never return. The Lutheran Church Missouri Synod is seeking to meet this challenge through LCMSU. Why? Because 100% of college students matter to God and to His church. College is tough. You need Jesus. We'll help. LCMSU. Check us out at lcms.org/lcmsu.
We know that you want to build your family on the right foundation from the very start. The foundation of Jesus Christ. Concordia Publishing House offers more than 8,000 products for churches, schools, and homes, dedicated customer service, and an experienced staff to help you focus on what matters most. Click to connect at cph.org. Concordia Publishing House, listening, responding, providing for God's people. Concordia Publishing House, cph.org.
Talk radio for the Christian worldview. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. Holy Trinity Lutheran, Garfield, New Jersey. Grace Lutheran, Naples, Florida. St. John's Lutheran, Chicago, Illinois. St. Paul Lutheran, Unionville, Michigan. Mount Calvary Lutheran, Beverly Hills, California. Epiphany Lutheran, Door, Michigan. The Good Shepherd Lutheran, Inglewood, California. St. John's Lutheran, Sayville, New York. Apostles Lutheran, Melrose Park, Illinois. Christ Our Savior Lutheran, Elizabeth, Colorado. Grace Lutheran, Strasburg, Illinois. And Bethel Lutheran, Thunder Bay, Ontario, Canada. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Just go to our website, issuesetc.org, click support, and print a one-page flyer. When your congregation joins the Issues Etc. 300, we'll publicize your congregation on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal, the Issues Etc. 300.